Throughout the last year, many of us have spent more time indoors than we ever would have imagined. With social distancing and lockdown amid the ongoing pandemic, some of us have probably only just realized just how important the outdoors and the environment around us is. That is the focus of this latest Mental Health Awareness Special podcast, as we tap into the main theme of this year's Awareness Week, hosted by the Mental Health Foundation, and that is nature. Joining us, we have two special guests. First, it is a pleasure to welcome GB Steeplechaser and Ambassador for our charity partners, the Mintridge Foundation, Iona Lake. Welcome to the show, Iona.
Thank you.
Next, we also have the Director of Health Tech Startup, Moodbeam, who are also partners with Mintridge. It's a warm welcome to Christina Coleman-McHugh. Welcome, Christina.
Thank you for having me.
It's definitely a real Mintridge bonanza on this particular podcast. So Alex Wallace is definitely going to be happy with that. Thank you both, as I said before we start recording, for joining us. Obviously, there's a lot of open conversations on all the podcasts we've recorded so far, considering the Awareness Week itself. And I'm sure throughout this particular episode, there'll be plenty of things that listeners can take away from it themselves. Shall I start with Christina? First off, and do you want to just begin by telling us a little bit about what Moodbeam is, but also what the idea was behind it and why you created it in the first place?
Yes, of course. So Moodbeam in 2021 is something that organizations use or sort of large communities use really to see if their people and teams are okay. We created a wearable, gosh, 5 years ago. The idea came about really for Moodbeam, and it was a very sort of personal product in the early days. It came about through my own need as a mum to try and stay in touch with my young daughter when she was at school. She was having a tough time, and I came up with this idea of what if I make something that allows her to log her good and bad moments of her day, and then I get to see what that looks like. So came the evolution of Moodbeam, and this is the little guy here, a little sort of wrist wearable with two buttons on it, blue denoting a negative press and yellow denoting a positive press. And the idea really, and still is the constant, is really being able to have that instancy of acknowledging an emotion and then logging it and then having a look at that in the context of your day. So leap forward to now, and we have this in a workwear version, something that people can take with them, use it during their working day, or if they're in education when they go to uni, or on the sports track. We have many athletes who have trialed it in the early days as well. And really having that immediacy, to really acknowledge those emotions and see what makes you happy and what makes you not so happy, is what Moodbeam's all about.
Following on from from you as a parent more so, and I know it's probably something that tons of parents go through when they see their child having a tough time for whatever reason. Is there a sense of, as a parent, you really trying to get to grips with that? Is that one of the biggest challenges? But I suppose there's also looking after yourself at the same time that goes along with it.
I would say very much so. So obviously, when my daughter came home and was really upset, I was sort of really shocked because I thought we were that family that spoke about everything. I thought I would have spotted the sign. But to know that at the age of 7, she was trying to cope, she was aware of these emotions, a sore tummy meant anxiety, and the fact that she really wanted to talk about it but didn't know where to begin. Was really the essence of why I think it needed to exist in the world. But then equally for me as a mum, I felt guilty, I felt awful. I was constantly on high alert. And I think when you're in a position of caring for somebody or even caring for yourself, being able to harness what that looks like was really important to me. And I think that's why we've taken so long to get to where we've got, because we were all constantly questioning it, because it's got to be useful or else it's no use at all. And I think really, rather than worrying, it's better to find out if the worry is worth it, really. And I think that's what it, you know, started off with a situation in a primary school, but we all have those moments in our life where we're thinking, I wonder, is that normal? Should I feel like that? And having that self-recognition, I guess, is mindfulness in practice. So if you can start that at an early age, the better, really.
Definitely. And that's, I'm sure that's one of the common messages we'll talk about throughout. Has that been one of the key things for you in, I suppose, seeing Moodbeam where it is now, but also your family where it is now, is being open and acknowledging those feelings to do with your mental health is a large part of the puzzle, perhaps?
Yeah, I think so. And I think the biggest compliment we've had so far is from people who say it's like the missing jigsaw piece. It's that bit where historically we haven't really been able to talk about it, or we didn't know what that looked like. And having that ability to prompt a conversation was the reason why I created it in the first place, and you know, reached out to the team that I've got around me today. Because if you don't have that self-awareness, then you've got nothing to talk about. It's just, you know, circumspect, it's possible, it's this, that, and the other. And I think it's really important to remember that it's only useful if you're happy to use it. And anybody who uses a mood beam, it needs to reflect that their personalities are all different as well. And I think that's why we tried to keep it super simple, because the last thing you need when you are in a place of anxiety or excitement, because it's not all about the negative, is that being able to, you know, keep that really, really simple and not complicate it.
What do you think is the biggest thing you've learned, or the biggest takeaway perhaps you've had, and since, you know, you first started out to where it is now, considering everything that you've gathered along the way?
Yeah, I think it's a real leveler, sort of, really, to find that, you know, it came about because we wanted to help people change their lives for the better. But I think ultimately, you don't want to change that person. And I think, you know, even going back to my daughter now, she's 13, and I didn't want to change her. I didn't want to change her personality. She's still a little worrier. She still is an overthinker, just like her mom. But it's the coping mechanism that we created, so that rather than trying to change the person, you try and change the situation and the problem. And I think that's really key. And the biggest takeaway for me is that it is all about change for the better, but you shouldn't have to change with it.
Absolutely. I'll bring in Iona now. So in terms of your own mental health, Iona, and I suppose touching on what Christina just said about every person's different, everyone's got their own personalities, how have you managed things, basically, considering you've got the whole sporting side to it as well, as well as the endurance sport aspect of it? I suppose the clue is in the name, is that you've got to endure it. But how have you found it sort of juggling all those different aspects?
Yeah, definitely. Like any person and any athlete, there's been ups and downs in the last, say, 10 years where I've been trying to balance like my running career, my work life, my family life. You know, it's juggling those things. And I think it's such a natural thing that everybody has to do. And like you say, it's developing those coping mechanisms. So I think for me, they've been developing over the last 10 years. And there's been some moments where maybe tough things have happened in like our family life and things. And it's sometimes hard at the time. But I think as you mature, and if you have that support network and things like Moodbeam and things where it could then help you develop those coping mechanisms, I found for me personally, like my sport, even though it's often been a trigger of stress and anxiety, it has helped me. And I think I found, weirdly, last year in lockdown, taken away from kind of being forced to not compete for that period, kind of took me back to my roots of why I run, and it is just a great stress relief. So that kind of, in that tough time, was kind of one of my coping mechanisms, was going out for a run. And like we'll probably talk about in a bit, but being outside lots, and it's just developing those ways of coping through different life events and life situations. And it's definitely something, I don't think there's you ever quite master it, but you develop it over time.
For an athlete's perspective, I suppose, in particular, is it quite easy to fall into that trap where you make your sport all about the competition and you can kind of get away from the reasoning or the reasons why you fell in love with it in the first place?
Yeah, definitely. Especially if you've been competing since a young age, it's kind of, when you're a kid, it's all you've really got. You've got school and then you've got your sport, and it kind of becomes part of your identity. Like, you become the athlete or the runner. And so then your life decisions as you progress are very much influenced by your sport. So it kind of, then if something goes wrong, say injury or illness, and you have a setback, it's then hard to kind of work out who you are outside of that. And I think that's part of like a growth of an athlete, usually in their 20s, as they realize there's a whole nother world out there outside of sport. But yeah, it's just, yeah, developing. And I think for me, like the last 5 years, it's been constantly trying to chase qualification standards to like qualify for Commonwealths or the Olympics or Europeans. And I think if you let it can so easily become very stressful, and thinking, putting so much pressure on each race to try and achieve those qualifications. But I've definitely learned, especially since the Commonwealths, that if you put everything, like your whole happiness and your whole motivation on qualifying for like a particular event, that it actually isn't going to bring you that much fulfillment. So you have to make kind of the day-to-day process of getting there part of, it needs to be fun and it needs to be enjoyable. And yeah, that's what I've really learned, I think, the last few years, is to make my day-to-day running experience enjoyable and not just focus on the end goal, because it doesn't always, yeah, bring you that fulfillment you think it will.
I've kind of got two follow-ups to that. The first one, because I was going to ask about, was it 2016 where you effectively had nearly a year out because of injury?
Yeah.
Is that essentially what you're talking about, where, you know, you can have a setback like that and you kind of wonder what your identity is when you can't do what I suppose you're known for doing and what you think you're known for doing?
Yeah, definitely. Because I just got back from studying in the States. So I'd been in this athlete bubble, I guess, throughout my whole university years. And when I was injured and I moved back home after America, it was kind of like it just, everything fell apart a little bit, because I was hoping maybe I was even potentially going to stay out in the States and get a professional contract. And so that was kind of out of the question. And then there's no sponsorship opportunities if you're kind of injured. So you question where you fit in, I think, in the world, because I felt like I wanted to be have some purpose. I felt like I had skills to give, but at the same time, I wanted to pursue my sport. So it was, yeah, trying to get that balance of doing what I can to feel fulfilled outside of my sport, but also pursue my sport at the same time.
How is that now in terms of sort of the balance between you, the person, and you, the athlete as well? Because I think of, say, Lizzie Simmons, also of interest, and she speaks really well on it, doesn't she, about the whole identity and the self-worth, and how once she retired she kind of lost who she was a little bit. And has that helped as well, just I suppose discovering who you are away from the competitive side, or away from the sporting side of things as well?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's going back to kind of working out what, obviously sometimes you don't have to work out, you kind of know what you're interested in outside of sport. Sometimes it's just giving those a little bit more attention, and maybe developing those ideas of what you could want to do post sport, like after retirement, and getting those connections in place and really just giving it a bit more thought. And sometimes that's healthy, I think, to be thinking about other things outside of your competition. Or I sometimes found I raced better when I had other things going on, weirdly. I think it's not always easy to do, because especially if you've kind of gone through that pathway, that sporting pathway, it's easy just to have that as your main focus. So it's, yeah, definitely giving some space and time to develop. Yeah, I think your identity changes a lot anyway as you get older. So it's not necessarily developing that secure identity, because I think it's a constant change as you, yeah, age. But giving some time to sport and other things.
Yeah, definitely. And did I see as well that you're also now a qualified mental health first aider, I think as of February, if I've got my dates right. How has that helped you sort of understand, or has it broadened your understanding of the issue and what people might be going through at any given time?
Yeah, definitely. That was a really useful course that we went on with Alex and Katie and a few others from Mintridge. And yeah, I think it just it was just so much knowledge that I didn't really have before, and understanding of the different mental health conditions. I've always had, so my auntie has always struggled with her mental health, as did my grandma. So it's, I've kind of been involved, well, had it in the family and been there to kind of help them, and seen what it can do to a family as well. And not just the person, but how everybody deals with it. And like, yeah, the trickle down effect, I guess. So I think it just shows, it showed me how important intervention is at an early stage, and just being there, and also just giving me the skills to be there for family members and myself, if these events happen. And yeah, it was so useful. And I think in the wider environment, especially the sporting environment, it'll be really useful going forward. To identify people that are struggling, or and knowing how you can help them, I think.
Exactly. The signs are always so difficult, aren't they? And if you can spot something, then it can make the world of difference. I'll move this on then to more specifically the nature side of things, or the nature conversation, and specifically how, I suppose, the world around you, is a question I'll fire at both of you, but I'll fire at Christina first. How has the outdoors helped you, I suppose, particularly considering the year that we have just had, or are still having in some regards, with the pandemic and lockdowns and so forth?
I'll go for this. Yeah, it's been massive for me, actually. And it's been the only time that I've stepped away from the laptop, to be honest, or the phone. So, you know, and I have sort of talked about this as well, but my mother went through COVID pretty much at the start last year, and at the same time I'm trying to homeschool young children, and you know, a husband who's off on furlough and still help run Moodbeam. And if I hadn't had that opportunity to walk the dog twice a day, I don't know how I would have coped, quite frankly, because there's nothing more leveling than nature, you know, because it shows you that no matter what's happening, life goes on. And as you know, as sad as that sort of tale sounds, it actually was a huge opportunity for me to reconnect with myself, reconnect with my family, because before that I would have been traveling or flying off somewhere or missing out on precious time with my kids. And although things were unfolding sort of in Northern Ireland for me, and I was having to conduct everything initially over the phone or FaceTime, having those walks, because I'm very lucky to live in the Wolds in Yorkshire, so I have a loop walk as I talk about it, having that 40 minutes to myself was the perfect excuse to just switch off. And I think, you know, it's so important to remember that there are bad things happening, and bad things do happen throughout your lifetime. And obviously it's been like so intense for everybody, but to be able to have those moments where you do step away from the laptop, or you do go for a walk and you see wildlife that you don't normally see because the roads are usually really busy, is utterly brilliant. And I think it makes total sense to have nature as the topic this year, because there's probably so many people from 7 to 77 who, when was the last time that you saw, I don't know, a bunny sitting in your garden? When was the last time you sat in your garden? You know, all of those sort of things. And I think it's been a real leveler in a great respect. And although tech and, you know, the digital world has brought everybody close when they can't be physically close, nature is the one that sort of everybody reaches out for.
Iona, I imagine that's much the same for you as well.
I've always kind of loved nature and the outdoors, and I studied zoology at university, so I've always been like wanting to learn about insects, and I was one of those kids who was just into bugs and stuff. But I think that love really blossomed in lockdown, which I know I was very lucky and very fortunate to have outdoor space to kind of be in, and a lot of people weren't in that situation. But I think for everybody, we can agree that, yeah, how important it is for us to kind of spend time outdoors, really where us as a species belong. Like, I always think this, our brains haven't really changed much since we were part of the natural world, not kind of separated. So I think those reward circuits are still there evolutionary, that we are meant to kind of be foraging and be interested in the plants and hunting animals. And we're kind of meant to be, really, those senses kind of, when they're triggered, I think it's so rewarding for our brains because it's very natural for us. So yeah, I think it's, for me personally, yeah, just slowed everything down last April and having that time just to be outside in the garden and learning about nature again, because I think even if we're interested in it, we often just don't have the time to do it because we're so busy in our in our lives and the 21st century. But I think it was nice in a way to reconnect and have that kind of time to slow down and appreciate it again.
Absolutely. And own research from the Mental Health Foundation. It's no coincidence that this is the theme this year, considering what the last year has been. But their research found that 45% had reported that being in green spaces had been vital for their mental health, which I think kind of sums up exactly what we've mentioned about how important nature and the environment can be. Certainly, even speaking from my own experience, and I'm not an athlete in any way, shape, or form. Let's just put that out there first. But I really like running. But I like running because it gets me out. I don't do it for the times, so to speak. I don't do it for the races. I do it because I get to see things that aren't my own front doorstep. So that's something I think probably a lot of people can relate to. And even going to parks and things, and there's so many more people out running or out with their families than there were before, certainly from my own eyes. Christina, I'll come to you for this one again. Do we think that maybe before the pandemic, did we all get away from nature and maybe fall into the trap of just getting lost in our own calendars a little bit, be it meetings, work, burning out, I suppose, in some cases? And like you say, maybe this could be a good leveler for a lot of people, despite all the awfulness that has obviously happened.
Yeah, definitely. I think being deprived of your liberties, which really, you know, obviously compared to, you know, loss of life and severe illness isn't you know, anything in comparison, but really being told that you can only go for a walk 20 minutes a day, or being told that you can't actually get in your car or you can't do these things. Initially, people were a bit like, well, you know, I don't know what to do. I think we're all too busy doing the do that we don't actually stop and think, actually, this is really bad for my health. And I think, you know, you doing your running, and you know, Iona being able to go out into her open space and have her sport as a release, and me to be able to walk the dog and get back to nature a bit. You feel a little bit foolish now saying that those aren't part of your normal life anyway, because they should be there. And I don't know who we're trying to impress all those years beforehand, but certainly that doesn't impress me anymore. The, you know, I'm busy being busy. I've got this amount of work to do or that. It's just like, you know, that doesn't matter anymore. You do what you have to do, but you have to look after yourself. And I think some of the most authentic conversations I've had this past year probably never would have happened, because there's always this plastic, fantastic approach to everything that, you know, over Zoom, you're more forgiving, you know, like me having to plug my laptop in, or, you know, the Amazon deliveries here for the 10th time today, can't think who ordered that. You know, all those sort of conversations have been really good icebreakers, whereas normally we try and go in all polished and nobody ever gets to know the real person. So I actually think that it's been a real blessing in disguise, and the relationships, because, you know, with Moodbeam, we've never been about the silverware or, you know, money making. It's always been about the impact. And I think the relationships that we were building up over 4 or 5 years are what's brought us to this point now, because it is all about relationships, because without that, you don't have the trust, you don't have the integrity, and it's all about faith.
Is that, because I know that you have to depart in a moment, but is that, again, one of the big takeaways, I suppose, is prioritizing the relationships with people rather than the relationships with our jobs, as one example, or just material things, like you say?
It's everything. You know, the reason I'm having to depart in a minute is because I move my calendar around my kids now, rather than moving my work calendar or them around my work calendar. It's the opposite. It's now a case of, you know, no after school for you. I'm not ashamed to say, I never have been apologetic that I'm a mum as well as a business owner, and if you don't like it, well then that's your problem, not mine. And it's very much having an understanding team and having that relationship so that they feel that they can do it too. Oh, I want to break off to do this today, I want to break off to do that. So rather than sort of putting the people that you love second, work has to come second, and work has to be a different type of work.
And it certainly seems that a lot of employers have realized that themselves as well, and are making that switch around to accommodate their employees anyway. So that's always good to see. And likewise, I can speak from experience with my cat regularly interrupting my calls and meetings with my reporters and the rest of my colleagues. So I think we've all probably got our own individual stories of Zoom call disasters and so on, or the mute button obviously being on at various stages.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Christina. Because like I say, I know you have to, I say, a busy day ahead. But in terms of if anyone wanted to find out more about Moodbeam, where can they go rather to find out?
Yeah, it would be lovely to have a chat with anybody, really. We're online at moodbeam.co.uk or moodbeam.com, or we're on social media at Moodbeam Life. Or if anybody wants to link up through yourselves or Alex at Mintridge, equally we've got that connection, or LinkedIn. But yeah, it's all about relationships and taking time for the right people. So yeah, that would be brilliant. Thank you.
This podcast is a member of The Bear, internet radio and podcast network. Find more great podcasts at thebear.live.
You're listening to Sportspiel's Mental Health Awareness Week podcast specials. Go to our website or follow us on social media to catch all 5 episodes throughout the week, and help raise awareness using the hashtag Mental Health Awareness Week. You can find all those links and resources in the show notes of this podcast episode. So, Iona, there was a line that I picked out in reading a previous interview of yours, where you're speaking specifically about running, but also how, like, on some runs that you would just crave a bit of solitude, and that escaping into nature side of things. Is that very much still the case, and maybe part of what helps you get through, say, if you're having a tough training week, if you know you've got that on your side, then that can help you go the extra mile, quite literally?
Yeah, definitely. I love going out for my daily run, even though sometimes I never really know why, it's always hard to get out the door, even if you love it. Like, it's always just hard. Once you're out the door, it's fine. And yeah, it's kind of my, sometimes often like the best part of my day, just getting out and having that hour. Usually I run for about an hour, so it's just having the hour to myself. I often stop en route to appreciate the views, and it's always been a part of my daily routine, and I think it always will be. And it's, yeah, just great exploring new places. You get to just spend time completely surrounded by nature, which you don't often get. And I feel like I love going for walks as well, but when you go for a run, you can just get so, cover so much more ground and see so much more. And I think that's one of the things I love about it. And also just if you're somewhere new or wherever you're going, you get to kind of just see so much more of the place. Like every holiday I've been on, I always just run in the mornings, and I feel like I've seen so much more than just, I don't know, my mum or dad, because they've just been walking around. So it's having that kind of ability to explore and have that time to myself, which I think will always be a blessing for me. Yeah,
can totally relate to that, considering I live in the middle of nowhere, about 4 miles out of town, but I know I can run to town and go.
Yeah,
to town.
Yeah, it's definitely true.
Is that part of what got you into running, or loving running in the first place? Because I know there was obviously your older sister as to why you got into the sport in the first place, but is that part of why you loved it, that you, I suppose there's a sense of freedom that comes along with it, isn't there?
Yeah, I think when I was younger, you're not really aware of why you're doing something, you're just kind of doing it, and when you enjoy it, you do it again. But I think as I've got older, I've thought a bit more deeply about why I do like it, and yeah, that's definitely a big component of it, is that time to myself, not only to myself, but just being outside. And I think, like we say, just spending time in nature kind of gets you away from your to-do lists and your emails, and just gives you more perspective of how to deal with situations. I think after a run, I might be really, really stressed about something before my run, and then when I get back, I just feel like I can crack on with it without overthinking it as much, because I think it just gives you that space to, yeah, deal with things and think a bit more clearly, away from, often I find our houses are a bit cluttered with material things, and so without realizing, I think it kind of stresses you out that you're surrounded by stuff all the time. So when you get outside, there's just none of that, and you're, for me anyway, my mind definitely works more clearly and efficiently, and I often can solve problems that I've been puzzling over all morning just instantly. So yeah, I think it definitely, yeah, helps. And also, like, running on my own, but running with other people, it's just one or two people or group, it's often so nice just to, yeah, just to be able to chat. And I saw this study, I can't remember who it's by or anyone, but it was that saying, I think it looked at, like, the conversations that people have on their runs together, like just two people, and it showed that they open up so much more and talk about such deeper topics than they would if you were, like, meeting for a coffee. And they think it's because you're not looking at each other, you're not facing each other directly, you're kind of running side by side and moving forward, and that for some reason allow, like, want people open up more to each other and talk about, get to know each other a lot better on an hour run than they would an hour coffee. So yeah, I found that really interesting, but I think that's part of why I like to run by myself, but sometimes run with people as well.
I say that's really interesting because it's not something I'd ever really considered. Yeah, just, you know, how easy it might, or how easier it might be to open up about topics.
Yeah,
when I run.
Mm-hmm. I always find when I've run with people, like when I was at university and in a team or whatever, just on the run, it was just a time probably to vent a bit to your friends about your day, and then they'll give their input. And I don't know what it is about that. It's about the momentum, I think, of the kind of constant momentum of hitting the ground and moving forward. It, yeah, definitely for some reason helps. That way.
Is it even in the days of park run, which obviously haven't been able to happen since the start of the pandemic, but that's what I did every Saturday, is do the park run at 9 o'clock. And even just to start off your own weekend, like you say, it's something about running with other people just helps clear your head. Mm-hmm. And then for whatever you've got planned on that weekend, it just seems to come so much more naturally. So I say it's just so many benefits to it, like you say, particularly when you're running with other people.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, so so beneficial in many ways. Yeah. And even if you are, like, getting bogged down, if you're a competitive runner, if you're getting bogged down by the competition or the stresses of that, I think it's sometimes really refreshing and great just to strip it down and just run freely. Maybe sometimes don't wear a watch. I often go without a watch on and just think, well, I've got a run for roughly an hour. I know a rough hour route. I'm just going to go and not look at my watch. And yeah, sometimes that's really refreshing as well.
It kind of formulates into my next question, really, because you mentioned before about sort of the material stuff that can be around your home and how we can get lost in so many things. And so often I kind of bring that conversation back to social media.
Mm-hmm.
Just, it feels natural because it's become such a huge part of our lives, essentially. And it can be quite a challenge to not tear yourself away, but just give yourself a break from that noise, because it's constant. A bit like rolling news. And sometimes you just need to take a step back. Is that something you found where you kind of have to be a little bit disciplined with yourself to take that step back from the noise, but also hearing you talk about the watch, saying this is someone with a Fitbit on my wrist right now, not tracking every aspect of your life and just being a little bit free from devices and things like that?
Yeah, definitely. And it is hard to do because at the moment I'm, like, back on Strava, and my coach, I'm not always, like, seeing my coach every day. So she likes that she can see my run I've done in the day. But definitely when I was struggling, maybe with motivation a little bit or injury or getting back fit, I always just go off Strava a bit and just take my time, and I log it manually in like paper and pen, and I'll send a picture of what I've done to my coach, and that just gives me that space away from, I guess, data and always working out what your splits are and your mile splits. And because sometimes if you're unfit and you're not, it won't give you any confidence seeing that like in your face, like, oh, I'm this much slower than I was a few months ago. Like, so I think just taking that aspect away from it, like I say earlier, just gets you back to the roots of why you run and gives you time and space just to get back fit slowly and not get anxious about that. So yeah, sometimes I do just like going for a run and not wearing my watch, and I'll do manual upload on Strava to keep my miles at the right place for my coach. But overall, yeah, definitely is sometimes good to get away from that noise. And I've always struggled a bit with technology. I'm a bit of a just like to keep things simple, and I think because I'm a bit naturally of an introvert, I think I've found it quite tough to kind of be so present on social media. And I think there's often an expectation as an athlete to be very present on social media and almost be a blogger, and that's not something that comes naturally to me, and so I've found that hard, juggling being, say, on Instagram or Twitter. I'm awful at it. I'm not good at sharing stuff. And so, not that I don't want to, I'll overthink what I post, and then I'll get anxious that when I post something. And I realized for me, it wasn't actually bringing me that much positive things. I'm probably more negative. So I've actually got rid of my Instagram for a while, and I might bring it back, but I'm enjoying a break, to be honest. And it's just been quite refreshing not to, because I can so easily just start looking at other athletes' Instagrams and seeing what they're doing and what they're racing. And like you say, it's just noise. It's like you're surrounded by so much information all the time, and it can get a bit much sometimes. So I've kind of taken a break from it, and it was planning to be a short break, but I've enjoyed it so much I just haven't gone back on it. So I'm now battling with, obviously, with I've got like a kit sponsorship with Saucony, and I'm an ambassador for Mintridge. So things like that, I know is like social media is really beneficial, and I think I need to work out myself how I can use social media as a benefit and like as a positive thing rather than a negative thing. And I think I'm still working that out. So a work in progress for how I'm going to return to the social world, but yeah, I'm sure it will happen at some point.
Well, and speaking as someone who decided to come off Facebook, I get that again.
Yeah.
Because like I say, the noise can be quite a lot. I don't know if you get this as well, but I mean, we've got one episode that's very much on social media, so we've talked a lot about it already, but that pressure to be on it, do you get that in some sense, even though I suppose you as a person actually thinks, you know what, I don't need this. I've got more to my life than just sharing every aspect of my life, or at least the positive sides anyway, on social media, and that actually it's not a hard and fast rule. You don't have to have it.
Yeah, I think that was a realization. I was like, why am I posting like what run I did today? Like, is it benefiting anybody? And sometimes I can see that maybe it is motivational. And I think I want to, if I do go back on social media, I want to work out how it'll benefit other people maybe as well, and not just post just about myself all the time. I think I'm a bit of a pessimist sometimes. Obviously, people like when I've seen other people's social media posts of them like smashing a session or something, it does then motivate me, and I think, right, I'm going to go and do my run. So I definitely can see how just sharing the positive things you're doing can help others. Yeah, so it's, yeah, I think it's just, if I think it comes naturally more to some people to be better at posting than others, but I think everyone struggles a little bit with that pressure to feel they have to. And obviously many athletes do have to, because it's part of being an athlete is trying to work out how to fund it. And a lot of people are reliant on sponsorships from companies, and even getting, like, I get kit, but people get food and technologies and things that will aid their sport. And so social media is really great in being a platform for that and allowing them to be kind of a full-time athlete when maybe the funding isn't there from their national governing body. So it's working out if you want to kind of be that kind of athlete where you you're kind of advertising many things to allow you to come to live that lifestyle. So I think because I wasn't getting that much sponsorship from my social media, I realized for me personally it wasn't a huge thing if I got rid of it for a while, but a lot of people can't do that. So
yeah, I think it's very much a personal choice a lot of the time, isn't it? As same as what we were talking before about, everyone's got different personality, different things work for different people, and for some, being off it is the better way, quite simply. Yeah. So no, I think I'm always an advocate for people working out what works best for them, pretty much. On that note then, do we think that, I suppose, again, going back to the last year, and we've all had to essentially live virtual lives to some degree, be it through Zoom like this, or WhatsApp, I suppose, is another one in my case. And I feel there was a point maybe where people just became so entrenched in this virtual world that actually they needed to take a step back, like we said. Has there been a rediscovery, really, of what is out there rather than what's indoors, do you think?
Yeah, I definitely think that sometimes, yeah, like I said earlier, information overload is a real thing. And the fact we've got Google at our fingertips and we can know anything we want to know at an instant. And sometimes it's quite overwhelming for our brains because we definitely aren't, I don't think, wired up to, have that much information available to us. And this, we can know about anything, like absolutely anything we want to know about, we can. And sometimes I get overwhelmed about, I want to do this, I want to learn this, I need to practice my guitar more, I need to do this more. And there's so many things like you want to do more of. And sometimes I think taking a step back and simplifying your life is so beneficial. So I think for me, I've like really thought about what is it that is really important to me, and I need to give those some time. And also just what makes you feel good. Like if going for a run or playing guitar makes you feel good, then do those things more and don't feel like you have to do other things that you don't necessarily want to do if it doesn't make you feel good. So yeah, I think it's stripping back your life, trying to strip it back a bit and simplifying it, and yeah, spending more time outdoors because it's where we're really meant to be. And it is hard to find free time most often if you're working 9 to 5 like a lot of people do. It's that little free time that you have, it's working out what brings you most happiness and how you should kind of spend those hours. I think for me, I know I'm happiest when I'm outdoors and doing something outdoors. So that's what I try and do the most.
Exactly. Is that essentially factored into your day? I don't know whether it goes as far as sort of scheduling it in, but just making sure that you do have that time for yourself first and foremost. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think, well, I'm lucky that my sport is all outdoors, really, apart from my gym work. So that is, some people don't have the opportunity to be like, right, I have to go for my run. It's kind of a choice for them. Or people might think, especially I feel like if you're a new mum or really, really busy at work, like going, people might view going as a run as you don't have to do that. But I think it needs to change as like, we actually do need time by ourselves, no matter what lifestyle you're living. And going for a run for me is that, and for many people. So I'm lucky that it's part of my sport, and I can be like, well, I have to go for my run, so you can't be angry at me. So that's for me always part of my day. But I've recently really got into growing my own food. So I'm like, last lockdown, it kind of got me really interested in it, just having that time to learn about I guess allotment growing. I haven't got an allotment, just got the garden, but that for me, I'm a bit behind this year because of the weather and being a bit more busy than last year. But it's having that connection, I think, as well, to growing your own food. I honestly, like, makes me so happy just being out in my garden for the afternoon. I feel like I've just aged like 20 years in about 5 years. I often pick gardening over socializing these days, which isn't ideal. I think I'm a bit young for that, but I don't know what it is about gardening or being having that, I feel like it's having that influence over your surroundings as well, and seeing things grow from a seed. Like, it just makes you realize how amazing nature is. And I think that is something that many people found over lockdown, how I think like seed sales went through the roof and loads of websites had shut down because they couldn't keep up with supply. So I think it's not just a realization I've had how good gardening is for your mental health, but I think so many people had. So yeah, I think just being outside in general, but gardening, running, whatever you choose, is beneficial to your mental health, definitely.
Again, not something I'd actually properly considered, because when you think nature or being in nature, I suppose you just kind of think going for a walk in the park type thing, don't you? But actually, like doing what you're doing and interacting with it, specifically watching things grow or growing your own food, that again, that's just kind of shows what it can do for your own peace of mind, I suppose, particularly when people have, it gives you something, doesn't it? It gives you something to focus on when perhaps from the social side of things anyway, we've all been forced to detach ourselves from that thanks to lockdowns and things like that. So is that essentially how it's worked out for you? It's given you a nice focus away from everything else?
Yeah, I think it's almost like a meditation, isn't it? Like you're so focused on, and it's a simple task. And I think that's what it doesn't require you to really, your brain to go on overload, but it's such a simple thing of getting the seed, putting it in some soil, like, and then watering it and caring for it and seeing it grow, and then being able to eat what the fruit, like from that plant. And yeah, it would be so high in nutrients because it's like you've eaten it directly from the plant. So I feel like that whole, like, yeah, that all coupled together is just that process of doing those things just distracts you from maybe really the unimportant things in life, which we consider important, which is how you're gonna earn enough money for this and how you're gonna do this, which essentially are important. But I think it's sometimes nice to get away from all that, from the daily stresses. And I think that's why people, I think I read somewhere that like the monks in, I don't know, wherever they live in, like these monasteries, they often just grow, like they do such monotonous tasks and what we'd consider chores, but really they're so good for your brain. And I think sometimes it's just keeping your brain active and your hands active is very refreshing and good for your mental health, weirdly.
And like you say, simplifying your life can make a big difference when there is so much going on with work and things like that. And I think if anyone listening to this hasn't tried out gardening or growing your own vegetables, they definitely will now.
I think it's like Christine said, like the mindfulness in action is doing a simple task that can be considered a chore, like washing up or anything. When I'm trying to do it now, although it's sometimes hard to enjoy washing up, but trying to be mindful of that activity and not consider it a chore, because if you consider most things in your life a chore, then you're not going to have too great a time. So I think it's doing those things while appreciating your ability to do it, I guess. And mindfulness in action, key.
Exactly. Hoovering for me.
Yeah.
It's really therapeutic for some reason.
Yeah. I really like washing up. I always choose to wash up over cooking. If they're like, oh, it's your night on cooking, I'll be like, can I just wash up instead? not great at cooking, but work in progress.
Good person to invite round at dinner parties, though.
Happily
when
wash
those
up.
get back to happening. My last kind of rounded off question or topic really is in terms of sort of top tips for looking after yourself, or firstly looking after yourself, but also looking out for others. Because like you said before, being able to spot some of the signs. Should we start with looking after yourself first? And as you've mentioned, some great things that you're doing that you've used to help yourself. Any other top tips really that you've picked up along the way that would help people get in touch with themselves, get in touch with their emotions, and really balance out their lives in a much happier way?
Yeah, for me, I found kind of having a creative outlet really good for me. So some people, it may be music or art, or I've never been great at drawing. So this, I've recently tried, it's called macrame, like it's like the art of tying knots. So you get, it's just like knot making things. But anyway, that for me, having a creative outlet for something has been really beneficial and really enjoyable in the evenings, just to, instead of maybe turning on the favorite Netflix, I feel like I'll get a lot more fulfillment and like you just feel good after you've made something yourself. That and I think journaling, so just having like a notebook at hand all the time by the side of your bed, just to write stuff down. Sometimes you've got all these thoughts in your head and just to splurge them all out on paper. And I often write it in like, I'll be like, I'm feeling like this today. And then I'll kind of work out why I'm feeling like that. And I'll be like, I think it's maybe because this has happened and this has happened. And then I'll be like, and what can I do to kind of help this? Or, and then just getting it all on paper and getting it out really helps you to work out like actual practical steps of how you can, why you're feeling like that firstly, and then secondly how you can help improve that emotion. So yeah, that I guess those two things for me really help.
Great bits of advice. And then in terms of helping others, because we've often said it, if you've never been in that position, you can see someone is struggling, knowing what to say at that time can be one of the hardest things, can't it? So in terms of what you've picked up, particularly as a first aider as well, is there a way that people can approach it if they see, say, a friend or a family member going through something quite tough?
Yeah, I think firstly, it's just being there for them, like not always knowing how to help is natural. And I think for that person, just knowing that you're there to support them no matter what is really helpful for them. And it's listening. In the first aid course, we learned just how important listening is and being there for them just to kind of talk to, and not just being often being like, well, you're just sad, you just need to do this. Like, that's not going to help them. It's really listening to them and being empathetic and taking on board what they're saying and giving them options. So I think education is key as well. Maybe if you can do the first aid course, I'd highly recommend it. But just learning a little bit more about the best ways to approach a situation or what is out there for that specific person. So it could be that that counselling might help, or some people it might be going to see the GP. So I think it's knowing what will help them and having that knowledge to be able to be like, I think you need to kind of get this professional help, and because you won't always have all the answers. So yeah.
Yeah, I suppose not putting the pressure on yourself to fix whatever the problem is yourself, because then I suppose that's putting extra pressure on you, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. So yeah, it's just knowing the options what are out there, I think, a lot of the time.
Definitely. Thank you, Iona, for coming on to this particular podcast. Like I say, probably one of our most practical, if not the most practical episodes we've ever done, because I think there's so many brilliant pieces of advice in there from both you and Christina that loads of people can take away, and I think add a bit more balance, because like we've said a few times now on this episode, there was perhaps an element of getting lost in the hectic nature of life a year and a bit ago, and it feels a little bit like a big reset, doesn't it, for a lot of people despite all the awful circumstances. So hopefully that can be one of the positives from this pandemic, is that people realise just how important nature and the environment is. I should say before I wrap this episode up that, as I mentioned before, links to the Moodbeam website will be in the show notes, as are links to the Mental Health Foundation. If you want to find out more resources and things like that about Mental Health Awareness Week, you can. And we've also got contact details, links to any support services should you need them, in the show notes as well. Big thank you as well to Alex, who we've name checked a couple of times on this podcast, from Mintridge, for all the help, of course, setting up this episode and all the other episodes with it. And that leaves me to say thank you, Iona, for coming on once again, and like I say, providing such a huge help for, I'm sure, a lot of people who will be listening to this. And it's always a big, brave topic to open up about, is mental health. So I always have huge kudos for anyone who does that. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on. It's been great to have a chat with you guys.